The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier, Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And you're with me and Beverly Cadogan for about the next 45 minutes. So when we come back in the next segment of the show, I will be talking to Beverly, who's a legal expert from Canada, but based down here in Colombia now. And we'll find out all about her and how this resident of Newfoundland, this native of Newfoundland, came to be in Bogota, living in the centro, living downtown near to Las Aguas. If you know Bogota, you'll know where Las Aguas is, just a stone's throw from Los Andes University and all the other, La Tadeo University and so on. So very exciting. And we'll be discussing the issue of La Tertulia. Now, those of you who have been in Colombia for a while, or those who are planning on coming or getting a job here or following a contract, you will want to know, or you'll need to know, about La Tertulia. So, yes, don't abandon the show just because I said we're going to be discussing legal issues this week. It's really quite fascinating. And as one person who really doesn't understand the legal issues that are going on, just in that everything's made as bureaucratic and as complicated as possible to give the person in the know the upper hand. So we'll be talking about that, the legal issues and so on, with Beverly Cadogan. And so, yes, Easter is over. That's right, the big return to Bogota, return to Medellin, Cali, and all the other big cities around Colombia took place this Sunday evening. You know, the thousands of cars, people coming back from their fincas, back from holidays, back from Mompox. I wasn't there, unfortunately, in Mompox this year, but I heard that it was busier than ever. I imagine at Popayan and other regions where Semana Santa is wildly celebrated were full of pilgrims and holidaymakers as well. So I wish everyone all the best as they get back to work this Monday and you know, get back to work safely. And that, indeed, I hope that they've recovered because, you know, going back to work after a break is often very difficult. It's difficult to get back in the groove, you know, after several days off. So here, this one's going out to you, those of you out there in offices. That's not me. But I'm still awaiting the birth of my firstborn child. That will be taking place this week on Thursday. Now, Thursday, the 9th of April, quite a significant date in Colombian history. Not only, well, I'm not going to say because of my son's birth, but no, it's the anniversary of the Bogotazo. So those of you who know anything about Colombian history will know that, you know, on April the 9th, 1948, when Elisa Gaitan was shot dead, assassinated downtown, right on the Avenida Jimenez with Carrera Septima, right on that day, as he was a rabble-rouser, a leftist, a revolutionary, although not really, when we think about it now. Anyway, he was a liberal, and he was assassinated there, and what this created was the spark that then you know, led to what is known as the Bogotazo, and much of the center of the town was razed. I say town, city, was razed to the ground, and tit-for-tat killings between conservatives and liberals. And I had the very good fortune of meeting someone who survived the Bogotazo the other day. He was born in 1919, in fact, back in Mompox, but he was here studying at the National University, and he was a left-wing student activist, and he was on a hit list. He took a he sought asylum and was given asylum in the Venezuelan embassy while this was all going down in Bogota. In fact, I'm reading his book at the moment, but that's Carlos Alemán Zabaleta. Very interesting indeed to hear about that. But so the 9th of April, not only the Bogotazo, but another kind of Bogotazo, McCall Bogotazo, or better said, McCall Torres Bogotazo, will take place. So please, all of you out there listening, good vibes to us for that Thursday, for the C-section, for the birth, the C-section of my son. Anyway, coming on up in the region, we've got the Cumbre de las Americas on the 10th and the 11th, so the Friday and the Saturday, where all the presidents and premiers of the Americas region will be convening in Panama. No doubt Chile and Bolivia will lock heads over the sea exit, and Kirchner from Argentina will find some new issue with the Malvinas or the Falklands, depending on your politics. And of course, Central America will be addressing and mainly directing their thoughts at Obama, Barack Obama and the United States about immigration reform and so on. So it will be interesting what goes on there, what takes place in Panama on the 10th and the 11th. Will it bring the region closer together? Well, if people stand up and actually start to speak out about Venezuela, it might give the whole summit a little bit more credibility, because UNASUR and ALBA, of course, have failed to stand up and condemn behavior in Venezuela. But that's neither here nor there, because we're talking about Colombia right now. Our neighbor is not the topic of today's show. We will be talking about legal issues with Beverly Cadogan coming up after these messages. Don't go away. Thank you for listening to Colombia Calling. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here downtown. I've traveled today, folks. We're here downtown with Beverly Cadogan, who's originally from Newfoundland. This is the first time I think in my life I've sat down to talk with someone from Newfoundland. Here in Bogota, imagine that. And we're in her wonderful apartment. I can see the downtown high-rise buildings from one side, on the left, and on the right-hand side, we've got the mountains. I mean, you're in a privileged position here, Beverly, and thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. Now, Beverly, how has it come to pass that as a Newfoundlander, I don't even know how to say it, from St. John's is here in Bogota?
Yeah, well, I was living in Toronto, mm-hmm. and like all good Newfoundlanders of my vintage do, we all moved to Toronto for work, and I met my now husband while I was there. I met Luis while I was learning how to salsa dance, and the rest, as they say, is history. So Luis had been in Canada for some time, already a Canadian citizen when I met him, mm-hmm. but for a number of reasons he decided to return to Colombia, and here I am.
Wow, and so you now, married a Colombian husband, you must be pretty good at salsa, you know, to have seduced him with your hips.
I dance better than he does, but okay. I think anybody would agree to that, although I'm more enthusiastic than good.
Okay. Well, I understand. And whereabouts in Colombia is your husband from?
He's from the coast, from in and around Monteria, Cordoba.
Oh, wow, so up there in the hot cattle lands,
yes.
of Monteria, okay. And is he proudly costeño?
Only when it comes to vallenato.
Oh, really? That's because that's the music I can't stand.
I can't stand it all.
Everybody who listens to the show knows I have an issue with vallenato. So it's best that we move on from
okay,
that, because I'll get some hate mail at some point from this. Vallenato, so he's proud of his vallenato roots. Okay, fair enough. But he's not here today. What does Luis do? Just to get a background.
Yeah, my husband is an anesthesiologist, mm-hmm. and he works in, they call them las zonas rosas, so mm-hmm. the red zones.
The red zones.
He works in troubled areas in Colombia. Right now he's in the northern part of Antioquia. He goes back and forth between two towns.
Really?
Yes.
So these are areas with landmines and so on and so forth up there, because northern Antioquia is a problem area.
It's a problem area. I remember, I don't go there very often, but I remember once we were driving from Turgo, I think it is, and we saw somebody that had been executed, bullet wound to the head. I mean, they'd been dead for a while in the middle of the road. There's still quite a bit of violence up there. Mm. In fact, one day I found myself jumping from a taxi. I was taking a taxi from Turbo to Apartado to see a movie because there's nothing to do in Turbo. The hotel arranged a cab for me. It was supposed to be secure. And they told them the designated spot where to drop me off, and he didn't stop. So with my then limited Spanish, I kept saying, but I need to get out, I need to get out. And anyway, to make a long story short, I followed my gut. He slowed down for the only traffic light in town. I opened the door, jumped out, and off I ran.
Ooh, this is a terrifying experience. So, I mean, these are experiences you've gone, and now I understand you've been coming to Colombia for over 30 years.
Over 30 years. 1985 was the first time
I came. Wow, I mean, those were hard times, the 80s in Colombia.
There are things that I remember. For example, the hotel at the time was at Cameron in Cartagena. And I'd never seen in my life a gun. I mean, I'm a kid from Newfoundland, what did I know, right? So I'm walking into the hotel, and there's this guy all in this military dress. He's got this great, huge, I assume, machine gun or something like that. And I was horrified. And I asked him what it was all about. And he said, well, it's to protect people like you. So that didn't make me feel any safer.
No.
But I enjoyed my time very much, notwithstanding all of that. And I came back repeatedly. So, yes, I do know quite a bit of the country, and I have seen many changes here in Colombia in that time.
Wow. And so, I mean, anything else that you care to share with us about the changes over the last 15 years?
Oh, sure. I mean, there was a period where I didn't come back because it simply was too unsafe. A lot of the flights from Canada had been cancelled and things. So when I came back after about a 5 to 7 year absence, I was shocked to see that they were building bridges. Because no point in trying to build a bridge before it would get blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there was activity, there was construction, there was more of a sense of freedom. And people were traveling on the highways before nobody traveled, day or night. It was just simply too dangerous. It was really nice to see that.
Yeah,
so I noticed more liberty, more of a sense of safety.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, you have a wealth of experience that goes far beyond mine here in Colombia, but I can certainly relate to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I mean, things have changed, and there is sort of a bustle of life that previously there wasn't, you know. But we're downtown here, and this area has undergone quite a change in the last 30 odd years.
Well, Bogota has really changed for the better. I mean, I remember coming to Bogota a couple of times, and I could never have imagined myself living here. Now, fortunately, the center is going through renaissance, like most inner cities do. Bogota still has a long way to go, but as we look out my beautiful window, we can see much construction. You know, there's definitely a revitalization. It's going to be, I think, a vibrant and sustainable city center, hopefully like New York's, hopefully like Toronto's. In fact, Bogota sometimes now reminds me of New York in the 70s.
Yeah, I can think of that. I mean, I would probably, you know, a little bit before my time, but I mean, the images that I have in my mind are sort of mean streets and sort of a taxi driver type thing. But, you know, Bogota was, I mean, I read it once and I hate the phrase, it was mad, bad, and dangerous to know sort of thing. It was. And, you wouldn't have thought of living here at that period of time. You'd have been in a gated compound somewhere far up north. I mean, this is the truth. And we're looking down from here, we can see, the amazing graffiti art from, I mean, you can see it from your window.
Yes.
And what we were sort of looking over, like, I guess, to the right, the University of Los Andes, and to the left, we've got the Universidad Tadeo. And this is going to become a university city, isn't it? I mean, right here, I think that's the plan, isn't it? They're going to, and that will just change everything.
So some of the best universities in Colombia are in this epicenter. You have Rosario, you have Tadeo, you have Los Andes, you have Externado. So it's going to be more vibrant than it is now. It's not to say that it's not without its issues. You know, I wouldn't really recommend living off the main streets. I mean, I'm on this main thoroughfare for a reason. I'm not out after dark.
Yeah.
It's just once the students go home and once all the security is off the streets, you get a sense of what Bogota might have been like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 24-hour security, and as you can see from my door, I feel like I'm in the Federal Reserve of the United States.
You could call Fort Knox.
I'm well protected. But for all of that, I do live here successfully in the center alone, and knock on wood, I've lived here successfully now, and happily for a year or so.
Very good, very good. It's good to hear this sort of thing, because the problem is, you know, for me, I lived 4.5 years down here, and, you know, when the students go, the center is empty. And that's the only time that I ever ended up, I got robbed once, you know, at glass point, not even knife points. You know how people just throw their trash out in the street. And of course, you know, the street, he was an addict, I know he was, but he didn't need his own weapon. He just picked up a shard of glass from by a lamppost and held it to my neck. And I had nothing on me. I had 10,000 pesos. And that's all he wanted. You know, he wanted the $5 to go down to El Hueco and get his basuto, you know, the crack cocaine. Mm-hmm. And that was it. You know, and I got out of it fine, and he got out of it winning. And, you know, it was my error in having been out on a Sunday night at sort of, you know, bizarrely 7 o'clock, you know, very early, but equally the streets are empty.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't be there. So, mm-hmm. So what do you do now here in Bogota? I mean, what is your let's say your profession here?
What I've been doing is teaching legal English.
Wow.
Yeah. I have a background. I was an adjudicator in Canada. And here I've been teaching very high level, not just legal English, but business English as well. So that's what I've been doing. And I quite enjoy it mm-hmm. because I'm very passionate about all matters relating to law. It's interesting. I get to... meet very interesting lawyers and business people and judges and magistrates, so I quite enjoy that. So that's what I've been doing here from time to time. I've had an opportunity to guest lecture at Rosario University. I also had an opportunity to address the Consejo de Estado at their 100th anniversary celebrations, which was quite flattering. It was probably my best day so far in Colombia. I mean, I felt like I was back in the saddle in Toronto. You know, it was just really, really great to be surrounded by all of these people.
Professionals of this nature. Explain to the listeners out there, I'm sure you'll be wondering, what is this Consejo de Estado?
Yeah, the Consejo de Estado would be the equivalent to the Supreme Court either in the United States or Canada. The Supreme Court when it relates to all matters of administrative law. This is a civil law system here, so quite different than the common law system that I'm accustomed to. But they decide, it's the last level of decision-making when it comes to administrative issues.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I mean, we're a real honor to address them.
It was a real honor. Great. Yeah,
fantastic.
I really enjoyed it.
I like that. So you're back amongst the professionals
yes.
again. Yeah. But it's okay. So anyone out there listening who needs this, any Colombian businesses in need of legal English and aid in that, please get in touch with Beverly Cadogan. You have a website. Let us know
yes.
what that is.
It's www.beverlycadogan.com.
Perfect. And then there you've got all the contact details
yes,
and, of course, your resume, your CV, if you're English. And so people can get in touch with you and we'll see what we can do to help you out.
That's great.
But I mean, on the whole, I mean, things seem good. I mean, you're in a very nice place.
Mm-hmm.
You seem happy.
Yes.
You seem, you know, Colombia, you know, it's treating you okay.
Yes.
You're okay?
I'm okay.
You're okay? Good, I'm glad to hear. Even with the absence, large absence of your husband
yes.
out from that. But, you know, he's doing what he needs to do as
yes.
well.
Yes, yes.
I mean,
and he's very happy doing it.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so... When when you love somebody, you have to support their goals.
This is true.
This is true.
I mean, you know, these are part of the, you know, you sort of, let's say the meat and potatoes of life, really, isn't it? You know, so, but I to get here and talk to somebody, or you know, you clearly have a very strong legal background from Canada.
Yes.
And I presume you. So you're watching the legal system here in Colombia and comparing it a little bit. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of big differences maybe between Colombia's legal system and Canadian legal system?
Yeah, I mean, well, it was really interesting for me because I really didn't know anything about civil law.
Okay.
So the whole process is just so to the contrary of what I'm used to. And I really didn't understand that the whole civil law process, at least here in Colombia, is all written.
Mm.
They don't have oral hearings, hardly ever, every now and then. But it was very interesting. I coached a team of lawyers at Externado, students, legal students. They were going to do a moot court in Mexico,
mm-hmm.
International Tax Court. They don't know how to appear before... an adjudicator. They don't know how to orally represent their clients. And it was really interesting because the first day that I met with them, I went in and I remember one student in particular, and she will listen to this and she'll laugh at it, but she'd watched too much Law and Order on television, and literally her aggression, and I've seen a lot in my lifetime, I was just about running out of the room, right? You really can't behave like that in front of a legal body. You can't. So that surprised me, the fact that it's written here, the fact that it takes so long, and also that it's not based on jurisprudence. Mm-hmm. A judge, you could have one judge sitting on, say, 10 different cases, all very similar in fact, and in Canada, one would expect a similar outcome, mm-hmm. right, on the basis of, you know, things being equal. Here, you never know. You really never know. So I would think, how do you prepare? How do you argue? How do you have consistency and fairness and openness and transparency when you don't have any jurisprudence?
It's a curious situation, isn't it?
It's fascinating.
Fascinating for someone in the legal profession and confusing for any one of us as an expat who gets in trouble out here, let's say, you know, mm-hmm. who has some sort of legal wrangle, which is something I think we're going to address in the next segment. We're going to draw this segment to a close there, but we're talking to Beverly Cadogan, who's a legal expert from Canada, down here now running her own business. That's beverlycadogan.com, so if you need any legal situations, I'm sure you could advise expats maybe in legal situations,
No,
you couldn't. So, scratch that. But anyway, get in touch with Beverly anyway. We're talking to her about her experiences here in Colombia. This is Colombia Calling. It's been very interesting so far to talk to Beverly about her experiences here. I'm Richard McCall. You can get in touch with us always at www.columbiacallingradio.com. That's the website. We're on Facebook as Columbia Calling. We're on Twitter as Columbia Calling. What else are we on? ColumbiaCalling@gmail.com. So we're all over the place. There's no excuse for not getting in touch. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back talking a bit more about the Colombian legal system with Beverly Cadogan. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard. We're here in downtown Bogota with Beverly Cadogan, a legal expert living here in Colombia. She's been coming back and forth to Colombia for 30 years, but now she's here permanently.
Yes.
And we've been talking about the legal issues here, you know, the differences between, let's say, Canada and Colombia and jurisprudence and so on. But I understand, Beverly, that you know, in addition to what you do ordinarily, you know, sort of legal English to students and so on, you would like to get involved more in universities, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the university involved is the Externado.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about
this. Yes, I had, I guess that my next best days here, aside from the Conservatoire, was when Externado invited me to go and coach a team of legal students they had that were appearing at a tax moot court, an international tax moot court in Mexico. Now, the moots, when they're international, the language is English. So they called me in to coach them on their English, but also how to appear in a court or a tribunal or some sort of legal process. Because one of the main differences between common law and civil law is that civil law is all in writing.
Yeah.
So lawyers are not trained in how to address anything orally. And it could be from a very informal negotiation all the way up to appearing before a body like the Consejo de Estado. They have no knowledge of how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that coaching opportunity was absolutely fantastic because I had an opportunity, because interestingly now in Colombia there is more of a move toward more of an oral process. They are looking at and considering blending them. So law students and lawyers here will need to acquire this skill, and it is a skill that needs to be acquired. So I had an opportunity to really get in on a sort of a ground level and to really see the students morph in a very quick period of time from some ghastly episode on an American legal program to something where they actually came in third place. Nobody thought they had a chance. And one of the students actually won Best Speaker.
Fantastic. Yes. Fantastic. Very rewarding.
Yes, I loved it. I loved it. And that's something I would love to do more of.
So you'd like to get involved in the universities and this sort of training of how to prepare yourselves and how to present yourselves and
yes,
a good oral background.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Or with big law firms, businesses, anyone that will be sending their lawyers out into the wilds. Because if you don't know, particularly if they're dealing with, and now with free trade, mm-hmm. there are more, I mean, there's so much more business here now from Canada and the US and the UK. If you don't know how to deal with us, if you don't know how to deal with people from the common law system, you will you're just at such a disadvantage.
This is true. This is true. I mean, and Colombia has been so isolated for so long. So therefore, what you're doing is opening it up. Giving the opportunity to prepare themselves. Fantastic. I like that. So bringing positivity into the classroom. This is how we need to do it. Fantastic. Now, I understand. Now, there's something that comes along in Colombia a lot, and we get involved in it as foreigners and Colombians as well. It's the issue of something known as la tutela. And now, as a legal expert, you're much better placed than I to talk about la tutela. What is a tutela, and what has been your experience with it?
Okay. It's fascinating because I'm currently engaged in the process now on behalf of my husband. The tutela, I think, is misunderstood. Well, I misunderstood it, and I probably still do, but I'll tell you what I know so far.
You know more than any of us.
Thank you. The tutela is something that's put into place to guarantee a Colombian's civil right to an answer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm engaging in it because I have a waiver from my husband that I can participate for him. Mm-hmm. As I'm not yet a Colombian citizen, I have no right to do tutela on my own behalf, but I can do so on behalf of my husband, so that's what I'm doing. So when you're denied something here, it could be medication through an EPS, you could have been denied your wages, you could be denied whatever human right it is that you've been denied, you have this right to file a tutela so that you can get a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I thought the tutela was the decision, but it isn't. What happens if, let's make up a name, ABC EPS.
Yeah.
So they've denied you this medication. First, what you have to do is file a petition of rights.
Yes.
They will, as the respondent, likely not respond. So when the respondent doesn't respond, then that's when the tutela kicks in. At that point, you need a lawyer to draft the tutela. It goes to a judge. I thought the judge made the decision, yes, give the medication, or no. No, the judge only tells the respondent to respond. So in my case, the respondent is a hospital that didn't pay my husband. So I thought the judge would say, okay, hospital, you have to pay my husband. But no, all the judge said was, respondent, respond. So the respondent did so, but basically came back to us asking for documentation that they already have. So, because my husband wouldn't have been able to work there had he not proved he had his insurance, had he not proved he paid his Social Security. So at the end of the day, in my view, the tutela is a farce. I mean, it doesn't accomplish anything. I suppose it's good that he got an answer from the respondent, but I'm not sure that it will effectively change anything. Because now we have to go back to them, or I have to go back to them, with all of the documentation to prove everything that he's already proven. And I'm sure they're it's a game. They're going to come back with something else. They're going to come back with something else. I don't really think it's going to solve anything.
So, I mean, let's say, for example, I've had a job,
yes,
and they've, deemed it not possible or themselves unwilling to pay me. This is more or less what's going through, what's happening to your husband.
Yes.
So therefore, I get in touch and send a legal letter,
yes,
a petition to be paid.
Yes.
They don't respond.
Yes.
Then it goes to a judge.
Yes.
The judge tells them to respond.
Yes.
Then they tell me, come back with the documentation. It's so convoluted.
It is.
I mean, I guess it was almost a system. Why is a system created like this, that it's in favor of the legal system? I mean, it's in favor of the guilty party, let's say, on that one. And also, I'm going to tire out. Being the person claiming, I'm just going to say, oh, it's not worth my while.
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who's been involved with processes as a decision maker, it never occurred to me that decision that I would make wouldn't be followed. Mm-hmm. You know, that it just doesn't happen. But I think it is so that it's designed so that people will just eventually give up and go away. I think culturally here, people tend not to be as tenacious. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is something that I won't give up on. Although I must admit, I'm quite Tutella fatigued at this point.
I'm sure.
I mean, they try to obfuscate and make it as difficult mm-hmm. as they can. It even got so ridiculous where if they don't comply with the tutela, it's supposed to be automatically the sheriffs show up or the Colombian equivalent of the sheriffs take them to jail. Mm-hmm. So in speaking with a lawyer that's helping me with this, she said, well, if we do that, then they're not going to pay us. But they haven't paid us. That's why we're in the whole process. Mm-hmm. So if they're not going to pay us and they're never going to pay us, I'd love for them to go to jail. Why not? I mean, they've broken the law. They should go to jail. But there's just always something, but let's do this and let's do that, and it just never ends. Mm. I mean, I have a friend that got the keys back for his apartment where people had been living paying no rent for, oh my God, it must have been 10 years. That's how long it took him to get his apartment back.
10 years?
10 years.
How?
Yeah. They lived there. I actually went to his lawyer's office with him the day he picked up the keys for his apartment.
Really?
Yeah.
10 years, I mean, I can't even imagine that if I had my tenants in my flat in London mm-hmm. not paying me anything.
That's not uncommon. I have friends in Kitchener, an anesthesiologist who was able to get his license there. And he's been working there now for about 15 years. He still hasn't been paid from hospitals and Medellin.
Really?
Yes.
But why is it this way? Why? I mean, is there any reason that you can give us why it's so difficult, let's say, to receive a payment, or it's so difficult to follow it up legally? I mean, I don't know. Where does this come from? Is it something? Because, you know, I've been reading recently, you know, the maldades, the problems of Colombia all are inherited from a colonial background. But, you know, this legal system isn't rooted in the colonial law.
No.
It's not. It's more recent than that. So has it been created to protect people of a certain elite status, or is it just not? Is it unconcerned with the general public? I don't know, and I don't understand. I mean, it's so confusing to me. This I find, you know, and with all due respect, I mean, the legal profession I find to be very difficult in anywhere in the world, and the fact that we need lawyers to explain us things means for me is a big, you know, reason as to why everything is so difficult and convoluted, and so, you know, legalese and everything. Mm-hmm. It makes it a very I don't know. I don't want to be too insulting about the legal profession because it's a necessary evil, but it's an evil for me mm-hmm. because, you know, if we could all just read the contract and it wasn't so wordy and elaborate, then we'd know what it was. I sound like an anarchist, I think, a little bit.
No.
There.
In fact, I'm so happy you're saying this because I teach plain legal English.
Okay.
I've been a proponent of that my whole career. I don't know. I don't write. Anybody can Google me and see my decisions. You can see my Twitter feed. You can see what I've got. I mean, it's plain legal English for me, and that's my mantra. Right?
Okay.
So, having said that, why is it the way that it is here? I think it's such a complicated and convoluted. I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, and I don't want to get any hate mail either. Here I go. I think a lot of it is cultural.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is related to this idea here in Colombia. I'm not sure if you've ever addressed this. We have the stratus.
Yes, of course.
So you have from 1 to 6. So I think you have almost, I liken it to the Indian caste system.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the haves here and you have the have-nots. And I think that it's blending together a bit more now, but I think the whole system is designed to protect and enrich the haves mm-hmm. and basically to hell with the have-nots. I mean, that's what I think. This hospital in Choco,
mm-hmm.
it's the only public hospital, so anybody will easily be able to figure out what it is. The administrators there were stealing.
Yeah.
You know, they stole the money that they were supposed to pay, not just my husband, but other doctors as well. I mean, to me, it's inconceivable that somebody who sacrificed so much, and doctors here don't make a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
that they don't get paid while these administrators are driving around in their Beamers or their bulletproofed Toyotas. It's just absolutely disgusting. And I really would have liked for someone to show up and take those, cart those people off to jail. I personally would have enjoyed that. Because we're never going to get our money anyway. I mean, I doubt that Luis will ever get paid. So I would have at least liked to know he spent a couple of days in jail.
Yeah, I mean, something. Well, we now know why they've got armored cars, because I mean, it made a lot of enemies. Oh. it's not just to produce the situation in the country. This is of their own making.
Absolutely.
But it is tough like that, and I do genuinely believe exactly what you said about the strata system, that most things here are designed, not just the legal system, the tax system, the health system, yes, because it's so contractual. They're all designed so that the haves have it and the have-nots. I mean, and we're in no better place to think about that here than downtown, mm-hmm, because, you know, 12 blocks south of us is that huge economic divide on the Calle de los Comuneros to what then we'd say is South Bogota. You go down there and it looks like, you know, and I've got lost in my car on occasions when one-way systems have gotten me all mixed up. And it's not unlike driving through different parts of Bolivia and other places. It's a whole different caste, it's a whole different race of people, yes, with a different interest, different cultural background. And actually, what's been fascinating about that is once I went to the Museum of Bogota and they had old photographs of it, the South has always been that way.
Yes.
It was never been, right from that road south. Mm-hmm. And that's where all the cholera outbreaks always were. That's where all the indigenous people would come in to work as maids and live there. And it's the same today, but it's a rotating community. Mm-hmm. But it's very distressing, this. And I don't know how much you know about the tax situation here and so on. You know, Colombia are making all of these positive sounds about joining the OECD, mm-hmm, but until it's not going to be allowed in until they overhaul the tax system, mm-hmm, which is in place to benefit those in charge.
Yes.
I mean, and I, as a small business owner, middle class, let's say, we're being shafted. And we know that, let's say that, I know that President Santos is very keen in the peace dialogues and a post-conflict, and he's got to pay for it somehow. But as I say in editorials that I write all the time, you know, don't. You're throttling the middle class.
Absolutely.
Let's go after the big companies and perhaps your buddies,
yes,
who aren't paying the correct things. Because, you know, we're the ones who are driving the economy.
Absolutely.
At the end of it. But I didn't know so much about the legal system. Now I do know more because I'm sitting here speaking with you. Now, in the terms, let's think about it. How long is the time period? Is it you put the letter in to get to the answer, and they don't answer, and then it goes to a judge, and then the judge tells them that they need to answer, let's say, you know, as we were talking about earlier. How long is that sort of time frame?
Theoretically, that process on paper is very efficient and very quick. So once the petition goes in, they have 15 days to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the right to file the tutela. The judge has to respond to the tutela within 10 days. Then the respondent has to respond to the judge if the judge decides the respondent does have to give you a decision within 5 days.
Okay.
The reality of it is that this has been going on for 3 or 4 months, and we're nowhere near the end of it. If we have to, and if the respondent doesn't pay, which I don't think that they will, and we have to file a demand, mm-hmm, which is the Colombian term for a lawsuit, that will be years.
Yeah.
That will be years.
I hate to sound negative about it. I just don't think it's ever going to see the light of day.
I don't think so either. But it's something that maybe because, you know, I have this perverse sense of what is enjoyment. it's something that I have to see through. It's something I've never been one to step away from a fight.
Yeah.
And this is something that I'm going to see through to the bitter end. I mean, they're not going to make me go away, that's for sure.
You've got some fighting Irish spirit there.
Oh, yes, I
do. You're going to get involved. It's going to be a fist fight before we know it. But is there any way that all of the doctors, let's say, who haven't been paid can get together?
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I always wonder about is, where is this sense of solidarity,
yeah,
and where is this sense of community? No, they won't.
No?
No. I don't know why they won't do that. There's very little sense of being united here or a sense of community. They have associations, but they don't really band together. And I think one of the reasons for that might be the fact that everybody here is always afraid of losing your job. And so why would you be afraid to lose a job which is not a job because you're not getting paid? Mm-hmm. But for every doctor that's out there, there are three or four lined up waiting to take the job. And right now, the medical community is very distressed about the number of doctors coming in from Cuba and Venezuela. And they're working for much less than the Colombian doctors have been paid. Although the Colombian doctors, and generally in South America, it's no surprise, paid much, much less than developed countries. So I think it's this fear, and again, I think it's cultural. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Colombia's been engaged in conflict for so long that nobody wants to speak up for their rights. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, back in the 80s, you never knew who was going to show up to take you away.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's this lack of community, this lack of solidarity. But I really wish they would get together, because I think that the political climate, and I think with more of us here, more expats, more foreign journalists, more people who are willing to take a stand and speak out, I think they may find that they would get some support.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, more together would make a bigger noise.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's as simple as that.
Absolutely.
I've always considered the word solidarity to be a much more Latin word as well. You always see the posters of solidaridad.
Yes.
And yet it just baffles me that they wouldn't club together. You know, they say, rather than one person fighting one battle, you could have 20 fighting one battle.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they could be properly legally represented, let's say. Well, you know, if that's possible. But you know, it would just make more sense.
It would make a lot more sense. You know, in fact, I approached a local newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them if they were interested in featuring the story. And they said no, because it was too common. And in my view, when it's something, when it's a basic human right like that, you right to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's something like that, that's so commonly withheld, because it's not just doctors. I don't want anyone to think it's teachers, it's nurses, it's you name it.
Yeah.
Right? It's very difficult to get paid. It's lawyers,
mm-hmm.
right? Very, very difficult to get paid here in Colombia. I would think that it's when it's so widespread and affects so many people, that's when you want. I mean, surely that's newsworthy.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they weren't interested in picking up the story.
Now, as we, it's bizarre. As we're winding down, we've got the last 5 minutes or so. Now, I understand there's all sorts of problems in the judiciary here. Haven't they been on strike for a while?
Yeah,
they haven't been paid or something. I don't know.
the judges went on strike. Now, I mean, I never knew that judges could go on strike. they were. I think they're back to.
I think they've just ended it, really. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was interesting, though, because while they were on strike, I mean, I know judges who were working.
Mm.
So it wasn't, and they weren't considered scab, so I really don't understand what went on there too much, but to me it's fascinating that the judiciary can go on strike. And it was everybody.
Yeah.
So you can't have decisions made in a country when the judges are on strike.
And with a country that's so tied up in legalese and legal issues and so on and so forth, and documentation of this nature, I mean, the backlog now must be phenomenal.
Exactly, and it was already bad enough. And I think the strikes are annual. I think they're always close to the holiday season, the Christmas break.
So renovation of contracts, and yes, when that comes in, the Christmas break area.
Well, yes, and I know so many people here. I mean, what I was told was that we just extend our Christmas holidays.
But if you don't earn money, you can't live. How could it?
I know.
You're not getting paid.
Yeah, but generally the people in the judiciary are people with money and power.
Okay.
So I don't think they worry about it too much. The people that are most adversely affected are the lawyers who are representing in front of, and they can't work because no one's making decisions.
And so we're going back to the strata system again. It comes back to it.
Yes.
And people will willingly blame that on the colonial history.
Yes.
They will. And there is a lot. There is a lot based on that. But equally, we're now in 2015.
Absolutely.
You know, if we can see it, we can address it. You know, it's something that needs to be done.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, Canada was a colony.
Yes. Yes.
You know? So you can't always blame. It's a convenient excuse,
yeah.
I think, at the end of the day for what basically boils down to, I think, conflict and cultural issues.
Mm. Fascinating. There's another show in that one.
So there certainly is.
I think, you know, when we get the outcome of your case, we'll get you back on
here. Well, absolutely. I'll
hear how it's developed.
Yes. Now we have to provide them with some evidence of Social Security payments. So that's the next
which you have, actually.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I take copies of every document that I have. Everything that comes through here, I copy it. I've got archives of documents here.
Yes.
That if I ever were to leave Colombia, would take up a whole spare room, I think, in the end. But
I can imagine. Yeah. I'll be happy to let you know the next stage of the game.
Well, listen, we've been talking to Beverly Cadogan, who's a legal expert, as you can tell. She's here in Bogota. Her background's from Newfoundland and Toronto. She's Canadian, married to a Colombian. Fascinating insights into the legal system here. We've never had a discussion about Colombia's legal system on Colombia Calling, so I'm thrilled to be able to share that with you listeners out there. And if anyone has any questions about this sort of thing, you can get in touch with Beverly Cadogan at beverlycadogan.com. Now, and if you don't know how to spell that, don't worry. Just look up the Colombia Calling website or the Facebook page. It will all be up there. Her website will be up there, and if you can't get in touch with her, get in touch with me and I'll forward the emails and so on and so forth. If you are a Colombian company or a multinational here in Colombia and you need, let's say, someone to brief your staff in legal English and how to present themselves in a court of law, Beverly is your person. That's right. That's what, you know, we're all here to help one another. I really honestly believe in that. Let me just say thank you again, Beverly, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
It's been fun, and I've never spoken to someone, you know, from Newfoundland before. So it's, again, fun for me too. And it's been a great show. It's been incredibly informative and interesting. So I hope those of you out there across the world have enjoyed it. Get in touch. Please, we like hearing from you out there. ColombiaCalling@gmail.com, ColombiaCallingRadio.com, and Facebook, Twitter, etc., etc. This has been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall, speaking to Beverly Cadogan. I hope you've enjoyed this show. Thank you for listening.